You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
It is Monday. Oh, well, it's not Monday. Jesus. It's Thursday, May 9th, 2019.
It's that kind of week, brother.
It is that kind of week. And this is the MMA Beat. Sorry, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I'm from MMAfighting.com as well as SiriusXM. You know the gentleman to my left, Danny Segura from MMA Fighting, and then Iceman himself, Chuck Mendenhall, the man in the hat from The Ringer as well as MMA Fighting. If you've noticed, I look and sound dumber than normal because I had my stupid face operated on about 2 days ago, and I can't breathe very well. Hopefully I don't start bleeding on air. I didn't bleed too bad this morning, but it's been a bit of a rough run here.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you showed up, man, under these conditions.
Yeah, I didn't want to if I could be candid. But sometimes in life, when you're an adult, you got to do things you don't want to do. But here we are. Here are things that I do want to do. I want to watch UFC 237, which is going to be Saturday. So let's start there, gentlemen. I will start with you, Danny. UFC 237, it's going to be in Brazil. It's going to be headlined by Rose Namajunas taking on Jessica Andrade. First time that a strawweight title fight has headlined a UFC card. But here's the funny part about it. Rose Namajunas beat twice. I would say convincingly twice, although one was short, one was long.
Right.
Up to that point, the consensus best strawweight we'd ever really seen. And yet, heading into this contest, she's the underdog. She's the underdog against a woman that said greatest strawweight we'd ever seen beat in Dallas. Why is Rose the underdog, and what do you make of that?
Well, we know in MMA, styles make fights, right? So just out of MMA math, just because you beat somebody, that doesn't mean you can beat the person that person beat, right? So I think there's a few things to consider here. One, she's going into enemy territory, which is something that we don't really see with champions. You know, champions usually defend their belt in the territory. So,
which says something by itself, by the way.
Yeah, of course. In Brazil, we know that this is not just like fighting in the UK or anywhere else. Brazil is specifically a hard place to fight in. You know, the food's different, right? The hotels sometimes don't have saunas, sometimes don't have like the adequate equipment to cut the weight. You know, the crowd itself can be very hostile as well. Plus, I think, you know, there is something interesting about the style. And I think Rose Namajunas on Monday on the MMA Hour, she said when you asked her, you know, what opponent can you compare her to, Jessica Andrade? And she didn't really have anybody to compare her to. She said she's a pretty unique challenger. So she is seeing a new look. I still wouldn't label her as an underdog, but you know, if that's what the betting lines have her as, you know, that's what they have her as.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Because I think the Jędrzejczyk series should have boosted her stock, but I guess maybe it's just one of those situations when you break it up into, you know, how do gamblers bet anyway? It's all based on some kind of perception. Maybe people feel like she just had Joanna's number, which is a big number to have, but maybe that, you know, they want to see more out of her. If you look at it too, that first title fight against Esparza, you know, the way she was worked in that fight, I think that somehow lingers. It's always the first thing that somebody processes when they watch somebody. And I think that just kind of lingers over her career. So I don't know. I really think that going to Brazil is a big factor in something like that. But I think it's also a kudos to her for just being so strangely unorthodox and in her own head to just do these types of things. I don't know if the UFC incentivized or how they incentivized her to go fight in Brazil and basically give Andrade the emotional boost like that. But it speaks to kind of Rose Namajunas' mindset of how she doesn't want things necessarily catered to her. She's been very different in how she handles her career. She uses the spotlight well, but she doesn't seek it out. Just the way she operates is just a very different mindset. And This is just one more chapter for her. But I think the betting public, just the way Vegas works, I think that they probably, it's a perception thing. And right now, Andrade probably seems like she has more things in her favor.
You know, if I look at the story of Andrade here, it's pretty straightforward. She's been a contender who, you know, she changed weight classes. She had a couple of setbacks herself against Jędrzejczyk, but has since then just been on an absolute unbelievable run. The consensus, clear challenger for this title. Now, maybe that will change with some other ones coming up the food chain, but right now, she deserves it. But for me, and when I look at Rose, and I try to think, like, what the story of this fight is, Chuck, it seems to me like this is not about popular gain, not this time around. This is about, as we noted, going to enemy territory, taking on people, taking on a contender people think has a pretty decent chance of beating her. This is an opportunity for validation.
Right.
When you think about what this could do for her career, do you share that sentiment of mine?
Yeah, I think that, are you talking about Rose? Or are
yes,
you talking about,
yes. So, like, what does she benefit from here?
I think that she benefits, if she's able to go in there and basically duplicate what she's done in her last three fights, and those two against Jędrzejczyk, I think that puts her on a different level. I don't think you'd see her as an underdog regardless of the situation in her next fight, if that's the case. But I think it goes a long way. I think that it's just one of those things. She's 2-1 in title fights. Mm-hmm. There's still enough of a suspicion that maybe we're not seeing everything yet. I think that lingers out there. So I think that this fight, especially going against the momentum that you just mentioned, because Andrade has been just a buzzsaw, and I think that that goes into it too, the way she's beating opponents and then to have to go face her out there. It's not to compare, the therapeutic use exemption that Vitor Belfort, but all those guys that went to Brazil back in 2013 and just got waxed, it almost has a feel of that. Like you're being kind of fed the steak under the door situation where you're like, hey, show up and face Andrade, just lock it up and everybody put the sheet on and catch the blood type thing. But it has that feel to it. But I have to admit, that's what makes it kind of romantically fun is to see Rose have to go against the odds in that sense.
Yeah. I think, to your point, this is about validation. Because if you think of the strawweight right now, really the most successful strawweight right now is Yana Jędrzejczyk, just out of title defenses, right, and what she's done. Yes, Rose Namajunas is the champion, but, you know, defeating Jędrzejczyk back-to-back, you know, it's the same type of opponent, right? We know that she also trained with Valentina Shevchenko, which has beaten Yana Jędrzejczyk as well. So right now, we know that she can beat, you know, Jędrzejczyk, but we don't know if she could be the strawweight queen, right? I think if she gets past Jessica Andrade, all of a sudden she starts getting into that conversation with Jędrzejczyk where, okay, maybe she can be one of the most successful strawweights as well.
And do we think that the UFC is comfortable putting this fight in Brazil in part because, one, they want to go to Brazil, but two, getting back to the lingering suspicion you're talking about, it's like, okay, if she can prove this, then we'll start putting her on bigger cards stateside. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And I think that, like what you mentioned before, just her being the first strawweight champion to be on, you know, the main event. I think that speaks to where they're at on that too. I think that the potential is still there. When you look back to the original impressions we had of Rose Namajunas, she was being compared to Ronda Rousey at the time, who was doing all the stuff in the UFC. She was on Tough, right? And so she's coming up, and I think there was like this expectation she would do it. I don't know if we ever fully saw it. It was almost like her losses kind of stood out more than her wins, even though her wins have been completely impressive. So this one, I think, it speaks to her star power, what they want her to be, but it also speaks to the opportunity they want her to seize, I think, to go in there and do that.
And what about Andrade? Are we missing something here, part of the story? I've been watching the embeddeds. I've been doing my research on this one. I saw the countdowns. Obviously, been following her career for some time. She's an interesting character, but I don't know that we know, at least on the American state side of things, a whole lot about her. Yeah. What part of the narrative am I missing here?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, that's where it's confusing, right? Because I think I know Rose Namajunas more so than I knew Andrade going into the fight. I really don't know. I feel like everything we've seen about Andrade is what makes her dangerous, but I don't feel like I'm missing anything about her. I just feel like she seems like she's got a head of steam, really. That's really what it seems like to me.
Yeah, she's super legit. I mean, her skills, I mean, she stands out from any other strawweight because strawweight's usually 115. You know, that's pretty low in weight. But for some reason, she feels like she's heavyweight.
Yeah, you know?
She's very strong. And I think story-wise, like, you know, she doesn't speak English. So at least stateside here, you know, the UFC has always had a tough time marketing those kind of fighters. Like, look at Jose Aldo. Jose Aldo is who he is based out of his crazy win streak and what he achieved in the sport. But from a story side of things, I mean, we never really got that side, from the UFC.
All right, so let's talk about the co-main event here. I want to move through more topics today if we can. In the co-main event, you've got Anderson Silva taking on Jared Cannonier.
That's right.
Danny, how, on a scale of 0 to 1, how pumped are you?
I would say like 3, like say like 4.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's start this way. Yeah. What is the UFC doing with Anderson Silva?
I have no idea.
Why are they booking him this way?
I have no clue. This is extremely bizarre. I mean, Anderson Silva at this point, Anderson Silva can do either two things. Either you put him in a fight against somebody like Israel Adesanya where you can boost their profile. And I don't really, and this is no, I'm not throwing any shade to Jared Cannonier. I'm just calling things how I see it. I don't really see the it factor in Jared Cannonier, at least not yet, right? And then you're putting Anderson Silva against that. He should be either in two type of fights. Either, again, like a young prospect like Israel Adesanya, or maybe like a Vitor Belfort, obviously he's now at one, but like somebody, another old dog that has a big name, and all of a sudden that card feels like it has like a really good co-main event. Anderson Silva versus Jared Cannonier doesn't feel like a co-main event to me. Yeah. It's just a weird fight to book him in. I don't know what else I can say about that.
It's a diminishing returns thing because after losing to Adesanya, and I think that even that Derek Brunson fight, it wasn't the greatest showing. He won it. It was his only win, I think, in the last six like legit win. I guess the Nick Diaz fight was overturned. But the last legit win he's had in like 6 years or 7 years, it's ridiculously long time. But it's just diminishing returns because each time he comes back, they're a bit like I read Brad Okamoto's piece about there should be a story to his fights at this point because what else are we doing? There should be some kind of hook as to why you're watching this fight. I can't find the hook on this one either. I when they first made it, I was like, what are they trying to do? Is this a fight to get him correct again, to get him a win, and then launch him towards something? Was there a plan in place? Because I really don't understand what a win against Jared Cannonier really does for him at this point. And he's so out of touch. So drastically out of touch. Anderson Silva, when he's talking about Conor McGregor, I feel like we're in two different orbits now. Like there's the collective idea of what's going on in MMA, and then there's Anderson Silva's world where he's like, this is a super, super, super fight. And I'm like, a super, super, super fight? Like this fight is, nobody wants that fight. Yeah. Nobody wants that fight at this point.
It seems to me like he's fighting these guys, like he knows he's past it. And so he's fighting these guys almost as like a charity to the fans.
That's what it seems like.
Like it's an exhibition. And we're just lucky to watch
it. He's dialed into some self-importance that is just not the reality of our times. It's like, I get it. The guy was a GOAT. I mean, he still is. I think if you look back, it's hard to not call him maybe the GOAT. Right there with John, like a couple of guys.
Yeah.
But I'm like, at this point in time, given where, you know, all the checkered stuff that has happened to him over the last bunch of years and being like 40-something years old, I'm like, I think he values his position more than the fans do at this point.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. And this feels like if you're playing like the UFC game, you just pick like random characters and then that's the kind of fight that shows up. It really has no story to it. We'll see. But to your point, something that you mentioned interesting, he feels like he's doing just exhibition matches, just for the fans, like as a charity thing. But I feel like that works in certain matches. For example, Israel Adesanya was down to go technique for technique and compete with him in that level.
That's a good
point. And that was fine. Yeah. I don't feel like Jared Cannonier is that type of guy. Jared Cannonier is going to be like, I'm going to use my athletic power, my speed to do that. And man, that's just not the type of matchup that I want to see.
If he grinds out like a three-round victory, if Jared Cannonier just kind of, you know, your basic, bring the lunch pail and beats him across three rounds, what does that do for anybody? Yeah. That's the problem. I like when there's a future to a fight. Like there's some kind of springboard or something's happening there. I just don't know what it does for him. If he goes in there and knocks Anderson Silva out, I think that boosts his profile a little bit. But if he just grinds out a victory, I'm like,
and also,
that's
like,
expected.
Israel
Adesanya
has, I think, I'm not making anything up here, has a flair for the dramatic.
Sure.
excuse me. You know, he looks and acts a certain way. He's got a certain
kind
of
swag. He was willing to put himself at risk.
Yeah. But also, like, Jared Cannonier, I remember this distinctly. I had him on my radio show, and he was asking for pizza recommendations when he fought in New York. So a buddy of mine has lived in New York City since 1998, and he gave him, like, this list of, like, only a New Yorker would know. And then Jared went and got a slice in Times Square. It's sort of like that's kind of who he is.
The best place on earth.
He wins the fight. Don't get me wrong. I expect him to beat Anderson Silva here probably pretty handily. But he doesn't, and I don't say this pejoratively, he's just kind of a relatively ordinary guy.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it takes away from a narrative that with this larger significance to things that would ordinarily be there.
He's not going to be able to use Anderson Silva as a catapult anywhere. That's the thing that's weird, right? Like, you just, if it's a guy who has, he's kind of, you know, the radar's beeping on him as he's approaching, like Israel Adesanya, it makes it a different kind of setup. That one made sense on that level, but this one,
I just don't see it.
Yeah.
I guess what you want to maybe see is it's the same thing as every time you're like, well, maybe we'll see some vintage flashback of the old Anderson Silva in there and we'll get nostalgic about it. But honestly, I don't know beyond that emotionally. That's kind of that's the end of it, you know?
Yeah, this is a weird matchup.
Let me ask this way. What can Cannoneer reasonably get from this? Because let's say, look, if it goes there and it's like a 3-round split, yeah, probably not much. Yeah. If he goes there and just bodies him in like a round, there might be something to that,
that's
actually.
That's probably his best.
I think maybe we'll have to wait and see how the fight actually feels. But I feel like if that does happen, the storyline would more be like, wow, this is sad, you know, watching Anderson Silva in this situation rather than, wow, look at Jared Cannonier, look at what he just achieved. Again, we'll have to see how the fight plays out. Maybe he's very competitive and he actually pulls off the win. You go, wow, Jared Cannonier is super legit, right? But it's just not set up to feel that way. I feel like in this situation, it's either Anderson Silva looks great or Anderson Silva is going to look really bad.
And you get the feeling that Anderson Silva thinks he's one win away from being able to call any shot he wants in the world, which is the most bizarre of it all. So if he wins, you feel like he's going to revert back to the way he used to be where he's like, I want this guy. And that's going to become a public thing, which is just even beyond awkward at that point.
Yeah, if he knocks out Jared Cannonier, the I want to fight McGregor talk is going to go into orbit, at least from him anyway. I don't know that he'll be able to convince the masses.
Yeah.
I'll go start this way, work this way forward. Any other fight on the card worth or at least capture your attention in some capacity or another?
Oh, I mean, you know, Volkanovski, like that kid has been, you know, every time I see him, I'm more impressed. And, you know, if you talk to him, he's a very former rugby player. I think he's, you know, he's got a lot of unpacked star potential, I think. I think he's got more charisma probably than we realize. So I'm like, I'm really anxious to see how he handles the biggest test of his career. Because that's the perfect setup for a fight, right? A guy who's and Jose Aldo, who's all of a sudden back. He looks a little bit more like himself. And now he has to go through this crossroads with this guy who's coming up.
Let me ask you this, actually. I'll ask both of you this one. A lot of people complained about the matchmaking in this one, where they're like, why are they matching up Jose against this guy like Alexander Volkanovski? Whatever happened between Dustin and Max, Max is still the featherweight champion. Yeah. And if Jose wins again, he's the consensus number one contender. He's already not just lost twice. He's been stopped twice. Why would the UFC book him against a guy who would be a fresh matchup for Max Holloway? What do we make of this?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I thought when this was booked, it was poor matchmaking. I think Jose Aldo, as long as he remains at featherweight, he's going to be a cancer to that division because he is the outside of Max Holloway, he's the best. Period. I mean, he's been destroying everybody. Volkanovski has a solid chance. I'm not going to say he's going to go in there and get smoked, but it's still pretty risky because you got a nice contender. You got somebody that can offer a nice questions into a Max Holloway matchup because he hasn't versed somebody like Volkanovski. And all of a sudden, you're putting him against somebody that's a very risky fight and he could potentially lose. So. I don't really get the matchmaking in this one.
It could be a little bit of matchmakers reading the tea leaves a little bit, looking back at the Jeremy Stephens fight with Aldo or maybe Moicano, where both guys started off a lot stronger than it ended up. Obviously, Aldo showed the guts in his vintage form by coming back and winning those, basically looking great in the end. Maybe they look at this as like a little kick of the ice flow. All right, we're going to send him on his way by putting Volkanovski in there. You know what I mean? There might be a little bit of that.
Do you like Volkanovski to win?
I do, actually. I just think the kid is... I think that
you were talking about Andrade's momentum.
He's
how
like
about
this, right? Yeah. He's on an upward trajectory, and I think that he's probably going to be the best form he'll ever be in this fight. I would be surprised if he came out and he looked sluggish or anything like that. Obviously, he's hungry. This is, you know, I think he's going into enemy territory. He knows that. I think that the setup for him is probably a big deal, and he's I feel like you're going to see the best version of him.
Yeah. Maybe I'm underestimating Volkanovski, but I feel like Aldo has already received that look. And, you know, shouts out to Alexander Lee, who made a point of this on the A-Side live chat. Aldo beat a prime Chad Mendes twice. And I don't know if prime Chad Mendes I don't know if Volkanovski is as good as prime Chad Mendes. I mean, he already got that look of facing a really, really great wrestler that puts on a lot of pressure and that also has really good striking. So it's a tough matchup for him. Yes, I also know that was also a prime Jose Aldo. He's a little past it now. But it's a very tough matchup. I have Jose Aldo.
He does
one.
Get hit though, Aldo. So it's like I can imagine a scenario where he just takes one early and it's just
And the thing is, people are like, oh, his chin is gone. His chin is not gone, but it's not what it was. And against a guy like Volkanovski, who, by the way, is a volume attacker.
It's definitely more susceptible. Like, he leaves it out there a lot more.
Well, he has yet to get like knocked out. He's been hurt, but he hasn't been like knocked out cold.
Max Holloway put a beating on him. I mean, you're right. He wasn't unconscious, but. Yeah. Those were some... I mean, he took the life from that guy.
He took a lot, yeah. But, I mean, look how he's looked since, so.
Yeah, no, he's looked good. All right, so but what about you? Any other fight on this card capturing your imagination for one reason or another?
You know what? I'm going to go way down the line and say Betch Correa versus Irene Aldana.
That wow, fight, that's
that
a good
fight has been booked like 5 times. I don't know if you guys know that.
Is that the Habib versus Tony
of the women's bantamweight yeah. division? Yes. That fight has been booked, I think, like already like 4 times, something yeah. ridiculous, and always something happens at either end. And, you know, knock on wood, finally it's happening. And I'm curious to see how it looks.
I'm here for the Betch Correa stare downs. Yeah. Those are always the best.
Those are always fun.
She has, you know, talk about charisma. She's got a little bit of it too, you know, being like, yeah, the MMA world missed me.
Yeah, they
needed me and things like that.
And it's funny, like, all the fans are like, no, who is she? But then that was like the most replied tweet or whatnot, you know? It's like,
She's a bit of a troll artist as well.
She's got a heel element to her, for sure.
All right, so how about this one? I'll pick the sad story here. Clay Guida going up against BJ Penn.
So we had to go there.
BJ Penn, by the way, not a lot of people are talking about
this. I thought
it
was only happy things here.
Yeah. Have you seen my face? Nothing happy about it. But the point being is, a lot of people have said, you know, what is the UFC doing with BJ Penn? Remember, BJ Penn is still living with these, they are reported and documented, but they are still allegations about, you know, marital abuse and drug use. And again, how much of that is true, how much of it is not, I don't really know. But certainly there's a cloud hanging over him, Danny. What is the UFC going to do with BJ if he wins? What are they going to do with him if he loses?
I hope they stop giving him fights. And
one way or the other?
Yeah, one way or the other. I think BJ Penn should have retired years ago. I mean, I think after that second loss of Frankie Edgar, right, when he dropped to 145, I think we should have been done there. But, you know, he obviously kept fighting, and here we are. And you just hear these reports. Again, they're, you know, reports, accusations, but like, you know, it was his ex-wife, right, that said, you know, he uses camps to stay sober. And that's very worrisome. And we know, for example, Tony Ferguson had a bit of some, you know, mental issues. And the UFC had to step in. And he said something like, I'm working with the UFC to solve this out. Yeah. I hope that the UFC does the same with BJ Penn. I again, these are just accusations. But you look at his age. You look at, you know, he hasn't won a fight in almost a decade now. Is 9 years. That I hope the UFC, you know, steps in there and be like, BJ, you know, let's figure this thing out. Like, what do you want to do? Because I certainly don't want to see him fighting. I'm going to watch just because it's on the card. And look, at the end of the day, you kind of do want to see what happens, right? But, you know, as a fan, I'm a fan of BJ Penn. I don't want to see him continue fighting.
I mean, back in the day when Dana still did his scrums, you know, at fight weeks and things like that, I remember, this is clear as day, he was talking about BJ Penn being one of those guys. He's like, he just doesn't know what to do with himself if he's not fighting. Yeah. He's not in a training camp. He's, you know, you fear that he's going to get up to no good. He's going to start doing stuff that he shouldn't be, things like that. Like, he was talking about a friend, you know, Dana would slip into that a little bit. And it's funny to see, it's funny in the weird sense to see the time play out, and basically we're at the same spot with what he was saying years and years ago. And I think that really is the case. You know, I think that you just look at it and I don't think he knows what to do outside of fighting. And unfortunately, his name is intact. Like, we know who BJ Penn is. You know, what we remember him, it will always remain there. But where he's at right now in life is just very, very difficult. And it's weird because it's a fight game. You don't want to see guys that you kind of idolized for fans idolized take too many beatings. It's just, it seems cruel at some point.
Certainly and it's also scary. I mean, recently we've seen his generation. There's been a few articles that have come out. Vanderlei Silva has opened up about CTE. Babalu Sobral was the recent one. We also know about Matt Hughes as well. Look, you know, he is of that generation. And, he did so well in his career that he never really took that punishment. He never was never knocked out like multiple times or anything like that. But nonetheless, you know, we know how brutal this sport can be. And, man, I don't want to see him in one of those
headlines
down the line.
It's crazy, too, because Clay Guida is still a capable fighter who's a veteran. He's been around. He's going to know how to, you know, handle himself in a fight. We've already seen him against Dennis Seaver, who was basically an older guy on the way out of the UFC, and he couldn't beat Seaver. And then they put him against Hall, who's a BJJ guy who wasn't really, like, the biggest threat to, like, pound his face with his fist. And that fight went the way that I'm just, like, I'm not sure what we should be looking for in this fight.
An exit.
That's what it is. Yeah, but I feel like we've been at this exit a few times. So I hope if it goes the way we fear, I hope that that he does go through that exit door. And
any thoughts about how it will do on pay-per-view? There are some reports. Jeremy Botter over at his new project, Wizard, had said that UFC 230, which one, 6?
Yeah.
Was it? Did 109,000, 110,000. There's a lot of different ways to evaluate the success or lack thereof. There's a thread by John Nash. I encourage everyone to look at it. I retweeted it. This one's probably going to do real bad, if I'm guessing.
I would say UFC 236 had way more intrigue than this card.
And it was domestic.
Yes, it was domestic. That's the big issue, right?
Yeah.
Because even UFC some of those UFCs, like the Aldo one, was it UFC 142? I don't think it did very good numbers against Chad Mendes. Yep. UFC, even UFC 134, which was their return, I don't remember doing gangbusters. So my thing, I think that you're right. It seems doomed to be one of their low ones.
Yeah. I'm going to go out there and say 50,000.
Yeah, I think it's about right. Something like that. Even that,
even that. And that used to be just, I mean, 50,000 was just a core. Like, it started there, right? It used to be that was, there's 50,000 no matter what. So I don't know.
So this is not the newest news, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I don't want to spend forever on it, but I do want to talk about it because it relates to this pay-per-view news. So Brock Lesnar tells UFC he's not going to compete anymore, although that's not quite true from what Dave Meltzer's reporting. Apparently what Dave Meltzer says is that Brock wanted a flat fee of a certain number, and UFC said no. So he said, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. And so they're going to go with DC versus Stipe 2. The big takeaway from this story, when you evaluate everything, is what? What's the number one lesson?
The UFC should maybe not be as public about a kind of dream fight or a novelty fight in such a way, because what basically happens is like, hey, guys, look, there's a Maserati that we're going to put you in. You get to drive around in Maserati, and they're like, nope, you're going in the Elantra. You know what I'm saying? That's what it feels like in the end, because they dangled the good thing first, and then you get the second thing. Yeah. And I'm like, I feel like that's the buzzkill feeling of that is what strikes me immediately. If you get past that and you think of it from an insider standpoint where you're basically like, you know, this is a fun, it's a good fight, right? Like, you're like, Cormier, he knocked out Miocic, but, you know, he caught him too. And you're like, I don't think you saw the best Miocic. I'm sure that they do it again. It maybe has a whole different outcome. There's still tons of doubt over that fight. And it obviously Miocic holding the record for most defenses and all that probably deserves. I know that we've talked about all this stuff a million times. You can make the case he deserves to be there again, and I feel like that was probably their next fight. The other thing was, though, is the domino effect, because they could, if they're not waiting around for Brock Lesnar, and I know that there was like this back surgery for Cormier and all this that would complicate it, but if they're not waiting around for Lesnar, John Jones was there. I mean, he's fighting these other guys. They could have made that fight and been promoting that for July. You know what I mean? Or something like that. But because we were waiting on Brock and we were fixated on this, a lot of other things were altered.
Is it good or bad that Brock's not in the mix?
I think it's
bad. For you?
Well, for me, I think it is bad because I wanted to see that fight. I wanted to see DC, you know, get a big payday and walk away, you know, with a big fight. But man, I think this speaks to like how the UFC is handling business now, because I wonder how many big fights we're going to get, because we saw Conor McGregor, you know, trying to make a comeback, and all of a sudden that's been halted. GSP retired, wanting to fight again, and now Brock Lesnar is doing the same thing. You know, with that flat fee that they're getting from ESPN, they don't have that incentive as big of like putting on these big massive fights, and that's going to hurt the sport.
Let me push against that for just a second, because I had someone bring this up to me, and I hadn't thought of it this way, but it's worth considering. I have made that argument, and I do think in general it is true time to time. However, ESPN has got to be saying, right, if you don't want to bend at every interval, you don't have to.
Exactly.
But at some point, we want to see Conor on this platform. Yeah. At some point, we want to see Brock or somebody. At some point, they do have to bring a big star through this portal, do they not?
100%. Okay. Yes. I mean, they have an obligation to, you know, bring in subscriptions and big numbers to ESPN+. But I would say, you know, that incentive is a lot lower now because it's not strictly hurting their pockets, you know, whereas they had to put on big fights because that was exactly how they would make revenue. So, there is some truth to that. But I think, you know, it's nice to get that up from payment, right? And I think Curtis Blades put a tweet out that I think encapsulated everything pretty well. It's like, F you, Brock Lesnar, you know, holding out the division. But I think that goes a long way to the UFC as well. Like, look, you just kept waiting for this guy and kept dangling this fight, and now we're not getting it. And it's a huge buzzkill.
You think Brock's really gone? I don't think Brock's really gone.
No. I mean, especially if the Meltzer thing is correct, which Meltzer's usually pretty good about keeping his ear to the
ball. UFC lowballing somebody doesn't sound like
exactly. But I'm like, the guy obviously does this a lot. He does some version of this kind of leveraging game and take it or leave it, and then he goes and makes the money, and then I think he resurfaces again.
Yeah. Also, hashtag MMA retirements. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, I had a thought about Brock. I wanted to share. I want to see what you guys thought about it, because I obviously was out for a variety of reasons when the whole thing went down. And people were asking, like, what is Brock's legacy? Let's assume that he's done. I don't think he is, but let's just say that he is. Like, what would it be? To me, Brock has been like a mirror to MMA to let you really see what MMA is really about in certain capacities at every interval.
So he came in on this boom period, and you can read into the boom period of MMA through Lesnar, and that there was a pro wrestling crossover audience, yep. and how big pay-per-view was at the time, and how important it was to be a big, strong athlete at heavyweight at that time. That's not necessarily the case anymore, but it was then. And then the diverticulitis thing, I don't think there's any real analog for, but his return at UFC 200 and how it didn't work because of the USADA era. And in every interval through his career, you can understand MMA better by watching how MMA was affected by him.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, by the way.
Yeah, true.
So you guys agree with that?
I agree. I've never thought of that, but that's actually very true. He has literally been right there for all of these things, right?
He's that rooster on the top of the barn by the weather vane, you know?
Yeah, and it's also because he hasn't been consistently fighting.
Right.
So it's not like we saw, you know, progressively things change. No, he's literally stepped in at different
eras. Yeah, he comes in at these big moments, and so that you can see the change moment to moment.
I wonder if he's going to come in the ESPN era. That's the next one.
And again, it would tell you a lot about the growth and change and everything else about MMA. It's kind of funny in that regard. Let's talk a little Bellator. We haven't talked Bellator in a while. I feel like we got to. It's Bellator 221 this weekend. It's an interesting weekend for Bellator, Danny.
It is.
For two different reasons. Let's start with the tournament. One, there's the tournament. Okay. Yep. Douglas Lima taking on MVP. Mm-hmm. Has this tournament petered out a little bit?
What do you mean exactly?
So Douglas Lima, I think, fought, 8 months ago
for
the first time? He's facing MVP. Maybe folks don't think it's that competitive because they really like Douglas Lima. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't really know Douglas Lima. Maybe it's a lot of factors. I'm not here poo-pooing the tournament. I think the tournament is great. I'm not poo-pooing the fight. I think the fight is great, especially it's a tournament. The guys got to where they got. I don't see a lot of chatter about it.
I think this card has flown a little bit under the radar. But it's also, there's so much going on in the world of MMA right now that, you know, it's hard to stand out. But dude, this is a great tournament. This is something that I'm really excited about because fans for the longest time were complaining and crying about how MVP wasn't getting anybody legit, how they want to see him get challenged. Well, you got the chance now. We got the chance with Paul Daly, but I feel like that didn't really scratch the itch too well. And all of a sudden, Douglas Lima, you know he's going to put it on MVP. So at this point, MVP, he's 32 years old, you know, 14 fights into his MMA career. There's no more catering. There's no more prospect building. Yeah. This is it. Either you're legit or you're not. We're going to find out on Saturday if he's that guy. And I feel like you can do the same thing on some other fights.
What you're doing is you're selling me the merit of the tournament. I don't need the merit sold to me. I'm asking about, to what degree has it maintained visibility by virtue of its own strengths?
I think there's an argument that has dwindled down a little bit.
I'm convinced. You're convinced. Yeah. He's convinced. You don't have to convince me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there is some interest loss just because how long it's taken to play out.
It's always a problem. It always is a problem.
Yeah, and it doesn't help also the champion, Rory McDonald, with those comments that came out. That also, you know, you want to see a fired up Rory rather than like, hey, you know, I don't know if I have it in me anymore.
I think it has petered out. Part of it is Douglas Lima never seems to attract, for whatever reason, a diehard's critical eye. We just don't make him an event. We don't circle him. I don't know why it is, honestly. If you watch him fight,
he's so good.
He is so good. And he's literally like an assassin the way he approaches it. I find him fascinating in that sense. But for whatever reason, he has not translated. And so he's been, you know, quiet as usual. I think the bigger issue was that Daly MVP fight. Because I was there, and that building sagged and died by the second round.
It was not a star-making performance.
It was not. And I mean, I think that for some reason, that just, why it was like, you know, watching the flowers in the garden wilt and die, all at once. And I for whatever reason, this has carried over. Not many people are talking about this. If MVP had gone in there and just smoked Paul Daly, I feel like there would have been a lot more chatter about this. But he just didn't do it.
All right.
Also, give it some time, because right now we have this fight. It could be very exciting. It could be a good fight. And then in June, we have, you know, Gracie McDonald. So things could turn.
All that, that NYC card has turned out to be phenomenal. And I'm looking forward to that being here. I'm sold on the tournament. I love it. I love the idea of the tournament. I think the fights, not all of them have gone that great, but the people who are there who should be there, I'm looking around and I'm like, is it because I've been out? I don't see people chatting about it too much. That takes us, though, to the main event. Now, this one actually has captured a lot of attention. It's a champ fight, if you think about it, right? If I'm not mistaken.
That is.
Although, it's in a weird way. But it's a grudge match, man.
That's what's fun, right?
Yo, if you have followed the Pitbull brothers at all, Patricio Pitbull and whoever runs his Twitter account has been hammering Mike Chandler for years. Now, Mike has fought his brother, I believe, twice.
Yeah. It feels like they fought like 30 times.
It feels like they have.
He's always going against a pit bull.
Dude, it's the Hatfields and the McCoys, man. It is a show. Do you like how, I got to tell you, I love how angry it is.
Sure.
I love, it's a little bit more one-sided than it is mutual, but the fact that Chandler has the wins and Patricio has the animosity, it makes for an interesting tension.
You just start with the fact that a partition is raised, right? Like they couldn't have faced each other. And that's, well, that was one of the reasons when he's fighting Patricky and he's knocking Patricky out in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And you know, the other guy's barking at him, you know, you're like, well, you guys can't fight, but here you get past the partition and you realize that there's a revenge factor, right? Like this one guy wants to avenge his brother against this guy who, you know, took his soul and put it in a jar on his bookcase, you know, for a while. And I'm like, to me, I love those setups, you know, an organic feel of bad blood always translates to a good fight, I feel like. You know? And Michael Chandler, let's put it this too. Like, these are two of the first Bellator stars. They're guys who are Bellator through and through. They're the guys that have been there the whole way.
Yep.
And there's an element, too, that, you know, Chandler should win, right? Like, Chandler is who he is. But he ever so often takes his foot off the gas and loses this kind of fight. So, you know, we've seen it with, going back to the Will Brooks series. You know, people thought that he was going to smoke Will Brooks. He didn't. And then, you know, the Brent Primus fight. So I think that element of doubt plays over just a little bit too, and that adds something for me.
Yeah. I think the bad blood is what's really capturing my attention here. I have this clear picture of, like, when Chandler knocked out Patricky, and then you just see Patricio on the cage just yelling at him, and they're just going back and forth. I mean, he knocked out his brother in front of him, you know?
I was there for that fight in St. Louis.
And then got on the cage and heckled him, and then in media interviews called himself a dog owner.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
This is super intense, and I'm looking forward to it. And like you said, these are two Bellator OGs, and it's always nice seeing that, because it feels like sometimes the big fights that Bellator is able to put on is because of names from some other organizations. Right. This is 100% Bellator. And, you know, it's nice to see, you know, the Bellator brand out there.
Also, it's kind of interesting that both UFC and Bellator, within a couple of months of each other, are having a featherweight champ go up against their lightweight champ. I suspect, though, Max was a really big featherweight. Mm-hmm. Patricio is not a really big featherweight. He's not by any means a small one. But he's far from big, and Chandler is an enormous.
He's fueled like the Count of Monte Cristo. It's all revenge and taking blood, right? Like, it doesn't matter the size of him. He just wants to go exact revenge.
Let me ask you about one aspect. I had Michael Chandler on the MMA Hour on Monday, and I asked him about it because it's something that's been really sticking out to me. Patricio has been out there just absolutely beating the drum that Michael Chandler's a PED user. Now, to our knowledge, that is not true. And I asked him about it explicitly. He said it's absolutely not true.
You asked Chandler about it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I asked him, is there any merit to it? Because a lot of media will be like, how do you feel about it? No, is it true? Is it true or is it not true? And because I have to rely on his answers.
Of course.
I don't suspect it, but I had to ask him. He denies it. And then I asked him a different question, which was, do you feel like your reputation has been stained by a guy just getting out there and saying these kinds of things? And you not really having to be, all you could say is no. It's like, how does it feel to beat your wife?
Right.
But I didn't beat my wife. Yeah, how does that feel, wife beat? You know what I mean? Like, how do we feel about fighters accusing each other of things like this? And then how do you cover it when it is essentially kind of baseless?
So if in the end it came out that Chandler was cheating or he was doing PEDs, I guess you'd be look back on this and be like, well, he was trying to tell us. We were ignoring him, but he was trying to tell us. But because it's unsubstantiated and it's just kind of out there, I always feel like this kind of thing is a bad look.
Yeah.
Because there are very few things that are below the belt, but this is one of them where you just start making stuff up. If that's what the case is, you can't just start making stuff up about somebody. I mean, it's just...
And what people always say is like, oh, well, Cody was saying stuff about TJ and it all came true. Okay. A lot of it came true. But you could go down the list of people who've accused the other person and none of it has come true. Yeah. So I was battling with this. I was like, how are you supposed to cover this? You know, I don't really know.
Yeah, it's weird because you kind of have to cover it just because it's part of trash talk, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a bad look, not only for that fighter, but just for the sport in general, you know? Yeah, it's a weird one. I guess you just got to be careful in stating that, look, you know, these are claims. Chandler has never failed any drug test, and kind of be very clear about that.
I know. Here we are talking about Chandler with drug. The guys, if but for the fact that Patricio brings it up, we would probably never bring
it
up.
It's crazy with Michael Chandler, right? Like, he's a guy who's been nothing but loyal to Bellator. He sought opportunities. He goes and adopts, you know, this kid, and has this whole like feel good story going on, and yet we end up talking about him in a way that over speculation of something that's unsubstantiated. Yeah. It's really weird. The fight game is very strange in how it works. But it tells you, man, the power you have of a microphone and just kind of repetition. If you just keep saying stuff, eventually it sticks. Or somebody hears it and like, hey, isn't that guy? Didn't he get busted for PEDs? You know what I mean? It's just, it's one of those strange setups. But I don't like it. I don't like, where are the boundaries then? If somebody's just going to make up stuff about him, you know.
I mean, guy. Or if you're going to or if you're going to say something like that, well, where's the evidence? Like,
true.
If you're going to come out with these claims, like, what do you have to support them rather than, you know?
This is MMA. You don't need evidence to make claims.
that's a good point.
All right. So then that takes us to something else. We discussed it briefly. So, Chuck, let me go to you very quickly on this one. Conor Cowboy. So Cowboy wins, defeating Ally Quinta. By the way, I was looking at some of the Cowboy's wins. The Ally Quinta win stands up there as one of the best.
Oh, yeah. This was a fight designed for him to lose, I think.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, the times he's faced guys like this, I feel like the guys who, you know, maybe are at the top or near it or for whatever reason, that's when he has dropped the ball. Like, he beats the guys who are kind of usually the up-and-comers, like the prospects. He's able to beat them. He's able to kind of, you know, discard some of the known names, like the Matt Browns, the guys who are the brawler. Like, he's able to do that.
Yep.
But if there's a guy who just seems superior sometimes, he'll fight down. I don't know why. He just doesn't show up in the moment. So it was telling for him to go beat Ally Quinta. This was a big one.
All right. So then it gets to this question of, like, should he face Conor? Let me get your temperature on this one. Do you like that fight? Do you love that fight? I guess actually is a better question.
So I love any idea that Conor McGregor would fight one of these guys. Like, he's certainly one of them at this point. I feel like they've had multiple moments where we've contemplated it, going back to that big Go Big event or whatever that was back in the day. They've been kind of at it since then, and we've had many times where we've contemplated it. And I feel like at this point, Cowboy Cerrone couldn't have put himself in a better position to get it. And so at this point, I'm like, I hope it happens. I don't know if I would say I love it. I love it as much as if Gaethje fought, you know, something like that. Like, there's a couple of fights they could put together. But, yeah, I would like to see it. I just want to see – I would like to stop flirting with the idea and actually book it. But at this point, I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what McGregor – like, you hear Dana White, and he says he's negotiating. Oh, we're going to have something in the summer. That would make sense. That's what Cowboy wants. So I hope for Cowboy's sake, and I think that's a winnable fight also for Conor McGregor. I think it makes sense on that level.
Yeah, I love it.
So let me ask you this then, because we talked about it a little already. Given what we talked about with Brock, do you have concerns that they will not be able to make a Conor and Cowboy fight in terms of ESPN, money, the plus thing, whole nine yards?
Yeah, of course. I think it's very possible that it doesn't happen, but I'm not too worried about, you know, how the negotiations are going to go down, because Conor McGregor is not the champion. The ball keeps rolling with Khabib defending his belt against Dustin Poirier, against whoever else comes up. The issue with the Brock situation was that Brock wanted to fight the champion. So all of a sudden, you got guys like Francis Ngannou, JDS, who are very deserving of fighting for that belt, waiting and having to take other fights that they probably shouldn't have if the champion would have been active, right? Yeah. So that's my issue with it. But look, this fight is not clogging anything up. So, you know, take your time to, you know, for whatever, however long it takes to build, you know, do it. But I'm all for Budweiser versus Proper 12. Yeah. I'm all for it.
I mean, back in the day when he was fighting Nate Diaz, McGregor, it didn't make complete sense. Obviously, it was circumstance that put them together, and then it became the series, and off Conor went on as many digressions, you know. But I feel like this is a fight similar because Nate Diaz to me was like a anti-man. He was it kind of joined forces with Conor at the right time, and they were actually kind of fighting the UFC together in this weird way. I feel like Cerrone is kind of the opposite in that sense. He's more of like the company guy, but he's similar in terms of his approach to the fight game, like the way he fights, the way he brings it every time, the way he kind of just no nonsense is it. And I love that aspect. I love when guys are like that. You just want to see a guy go in there. Doesn't matter what Conor says to him, tries to rival, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to go out there and he's going to fight exactly the same. So I like that setup.
And something I mentioned in the MARs, something the UFC needs to get better at is cloning their stars. Like, at this point—
Cloning?
Yeah, at this point, McGregor is you know, I mean, he's his own thing, but he's also like a platform for other fighters to boost their profile, like just like Nate Diaz or like Ronda Rousey did to Holly Holm, right? So you need to start matching him up in fights where, you know, the B side can get, you know, some benefit from
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
So just like Nurmagomedov, right?
Exactly. Look at Nurmagomedov. Look, he became all of a sudden a huge star just from that rivalry with Conor McGregor. And you know Conor McGregor doesn't have that many fights left if he's going to ever return. I mean, he might have like two or three. I don't see him having like a six fight career, you know, at this point. So put him up against other guys that have characters that, you know, that you can potentially, you know, get out there and put in big cards.
Let's make a bet. If they make it one day, okay, actually, let me ask it this way. Make a prediction. Do they make it or not? Does the fight happen in the summer?
I'm going to say it does.
Wow. I'm going to say it does in August.
I'm going to say it doesn't.
Okay. Right.
I'm going to bet against
it.
I'm betting it doesn't happen in the summer.
Oh, okay.
It could happen fallish.
I think it happens.
I could see it. I think it'll happen.
Yeah?
Yeah. The time frame you're right is like the slippery slope there.
Because you
got
to wonder, does he want to go before Khabib in September or after?
Right.
And I part of me feels like he wants to go after.
Hmm. You know? That's an interesting way of thinking about it too. Yeah.
Yeah, he also has to see how that one plays out because if Dustin Poirier, you know, manages to get that title.
Yeah, but he already fought and beat Dustin. Like, I don't think maybe he should. I don't know that he particularly fears that matchup in any particular.
But all of a sudden, like, that's, you know, he has more of a claim to get that fight than a Khabib rematch.
Right. That's true. Now, that brings us to another lightweight that I want to discuss here. That's Tony Ferguson. Now, there are some indications this week. Pardon me, gentlemen. I'm sorry. There are some, can I blow my nose on you? I'm sorry.
No, I'm good.
There are some indications this week that Tony Ferguson, I believe it was Brett Okamoto who reported it, that Tony Ferguson, we talked about it, he had changed management groups. He was with Paradigm, and now he's with Balanji. And he met with UFC officials, and while nothing has been formally announced, it appears like things are very much moving in the right direction, Danny, for a comeback.
Yep.
Do you feel, from the outside looking in, that enough T's have been crossed and I's have been dotted that you feel comfortable? And again, it's not our choice, but we're just observers wondering aloud. Do you feel comfortable with the idea of him returning to the cage, given what we know about the struggles he's been facing?
I do. You know, there's a few signs out there that, one, we know that he was working with the UFC to, you know, get the help that he needed. And two, his wife dropped the restraining order that she had. And, you know, they're back together. So, you know, those are all good signs. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I don't think he's going to take any fight, you know, any quick fight. It's going to be probably a nice buildup for his return. So, yeah, I think I'm comfortable with him returning to the cage. And I'm sure he's going to get a bunch of tests in whatever commission he decides to fight under, right? So, yeah, I'm fine with him returning.
Yeah, you got to almost trust the system a little bit. Yeah. Trust the officials that are
That's the only option.
That's really what it is.
Yeah. So you got to trust them that they're doing the right thing by him. And then you got to watch him. It's similar in a weird way to when Max Holloway was going to fight, obviously, and then showed those weird signs and they had to call the fight off. Which fight was that? Which fight? But anyways, you know what I'm talking about.
That was before
he was supposed to fight Ortega first time.
That's what Frankie said.
We had to see him. It was weird. It was weird to contemplate him fighting. And when it finally happened and we saw him go through his fight week, you know, he's a little bit of an eccentric fellow, just like Ferguson. They have their, you know, their idiosyncrasies. They're very different kinds of guys. But we saw Holloway go through his fight week, handle himself, and then look great in there. I think that's Ferguson's blueprint. He has to just go through his fight week, be who he is, look good in there, and then we'll put that aside. I think that it's going to take that sort of thing. Then you got to just trust the officials know what's going on better than we do.
Here's the part that is hard about trusting the officials when they're letting guys like BJ Penn fight. You're like,
true.
You know, obviously BJ Penn, well, I don't know. Is that a guy that should be fighting right now? Like, there's a lot of questions. You're like, Jesus, man. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a different question. Like, I'm with you guys. I kind of feel like, for whatever reason, I feel soothed. And my concerns are largely assuaged.
I think it's fair to compare that to the BJ situation, but there's also key differences there. Like BJ, fight skill wise, you know he doesn't belong in there anymore. Like fight skills.
Right. So why is he fighting?
Exactly. But Tony Ferguson, you know he's a killer, right? You know his skill set.
No, but that's not my point. My point is, if you're going to let a guy so utterly unqualified at this point, BJ's a legend, mm-hmm. but he's not currently competing as a top tier lightweight. He's not even competing. I mean, he's far from that. You're going to let a guy like that compete. Who else are you going to let compete?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And I feel like two things give me pause. One is that Tony is so much more visible than BJ at this point. So if something went wrong with Tony, it would blow up much more. So that gives me, like, the, I think the UFC is aware of the optics of it.
Right.
And then two, you mentioned his wife has really, there was a video put out. Do you guys ever watch Mixed Molly Whoppery? Oh, man, you are missing out. It's a guy who sounds like, I don't know, like a Coney Island guy who sells hot dogs or something. I don't know. But he's super smart. Or I'm assuming it's a he because that's the narrator's voice. He makes YouTube videos, yeah? But they're long form, and they happen after a story is almost over. And he made a point, and I thought it was absolutely true, which was Tony's wife went out of her way to make sure that Tony's reputation was not sullied in this by noting in her initial public statement that he's a great father, a great husband. We're just working through things. And then to your point, dropping it. So all of the response to Tony was, hey, it was almost like get well soon, man.
Yes.
Versus BJ, who everything has been secretive and quiet and, you know, behind the scenes. This has kind of been out in the open. So to me, it feels like, Chuck, if I'm wrong, a little more transparent.
A little bit more transparent. And it helps that he kind of came out publicly and said, hey, guys, I'm going to seek the help I need. If just doing one little thing, I mean, I haven't really heard much from BJ Penn. And it's almost like they're sneaking him through these cards these days. And I'm like, it's just an odd look. But it is it's similar in a weird, you know, like in spirit. But it's obviously a completely different setup for this. I agree with you. I think the scrutiny is so big on a guy like Ferguson. So they got to be right.
Because the fights that he is in at least the orbit of are Dustin, Khabib.
I know.
Connor. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of media those guys are going to do.
Or even Gaethje, right?
Which is nuts.
Yeah, he's not fighting in any prelims.
Any thoughts about who he should fight?
That's the problem with the lightweight division right now. It's just so clogged to that.
There's still no answer to this question.
It could be Gaethje. I mean, I would
to this day, man. I mean, it won't happen now. Now there's no easy way to make it unless he somehow slips in there or somebody gets hurt, whatever.
Yeah.
That'd be the weirdest thing for Ferguson to finally get the fight with Nurmagomedov after somebody falls out and he goes in there. But that's one of those situations where I wanted to see that fight just because of the styles. I think he's got the weird, unorthodox, sort of almost intangibles that might give Nurmagomedov the trouble. I would still love to see that fight. Obviously, that's not happening. So you could take any of those other names and I'd be fine with it. But I still want to see that one.
Yeah. I think if I were Tony Ferguson, I'd just wait. I mean, Khabib and Poirier are supposed to fight in September, right?
Yeah.
Look. Poirier didn't show up for the Nate Diaz fight, right? He had some issues. We know Khabib hasn't showed up to other fights as well. We know how crazy the sport is, you know, and we know how the UFC machine, they always have to keep rolling. So who knows? Either guy could fall out and then next thing you know, he's fighting for the belt.
This sport is so ridiculous that I think that that's how Ferguson and Nurmagomedov will fight. It was when we never saw it coming. All of a sudden, they'll be fighting. Like, you know what I mean? Where he'll fill in. I know that's unpredictable, but I can see that basically being the setup for those guys.
All right, so that takes us to the final topic before Under the Radar. PFL makes its debut on ESPN tonight. Now, what's crazy about it is this is supposed to be PFL 12, I think. And in the press releases, they'll be calling it PFL 1.
Because it's a new season, Luke. Come on now.
Yeah.
That's very confusing.
Still makes it PFL 12. It just makes it season 2. But, okay. How do we feel about going on ESPN, Danny? Feel like it's going to make it?
I think so. I think this is a great move for them because ESPN.
No, it's a great.
Yes.
When the season's over. Are they in anywhere of a different place, really, when it comes to attracting a fan base?
I think they will, man, because ESPN is a sports fan's platform, right? And sports fans are used to a certain order, a certain hierarchy, right? In soccer, we see it. In football, you know, a sports fan are accustomed to a certain rule set and a certain pattern where they can, you know, plan out and see a route for their favorite team, in this case, favorite fighter. With the UFC, dude, the UFC, I work on this full time and I sometimes have a hard time following the sport, you know, because there's so much happening, so much to consume. With PFL, it's pretty straightforward. So I think if you're a sports fan and look, you're not like super into fighting, but like you find it entertaining, it's an easy thing to get into. Okay, this guy's fighting this guy. There's a point system and it's just easy to follow. So I think this is a perfect platform for them.
I dig it and I hope it works. I really do because the last season, I felt like it did what it wanted to do, right? Like, it got a couple of these guys who were recyclables who were able to get in there and win this. And there was the one guy in Utah.
Sean O'Connell, who, by the way, is now a commentator for this season.
So see how these things kind of pay forward. I was really interested to see if a lot of people would want to join the PFL after the last season because you do see these millionaires. You see these guys cash in the $1 million check.
Yep.
And it is prize fighting. It hasn't worked out exactly like that. They brought in a few names, but I feel like this visibility gives them a little bit more. I feel like it's a nice second step, obviously. I think it's on ESPN 2, right?
Or is ESPN 2.
So and then Deportes ESPN2, and Plus. Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, but still, a very big step for them. And the visibility, I think, might help it because there was a lot. It picked up steam last season when it got toward the finals.
Yes,
I felt like we were
correct.
Talking about it then, but we were not talking about it during the season.
Yeah, so, the regular season was very much, was very much just filler.
Yeah.
And then you're right. I thought once it got to the playoffs, then you're like, oh, okay, there's
something
going on.
At least this season, they're hitting the ground running with this, and it'd be cool to see like what they're able to do with that.
I'm also curious to see Kayla Harrison's star power.
So let me get to that. So like, I disagree fundamentally with the idea that sports fans want to see a tournament. I don't think they would get in the way of a tournament. I think it depends, like anything else, on the nature of the tournament itself. What I do think is going to be a big test of the ESPN platform is, dude, Kayla Harrison, if they can just find a bridge for her to walk over, is going to be a star.
Yeah.
It seems like one of the most obvious things ever. Other than, do they have a way to get her across? Because she's got everything they could possibly want. A cool story, an athletic background. You know, she's amazing to interview. Yeah. Like, you know, and obviously she's a ferocious competitor, like the whole nine. But can they find donks for her to fight?
Well, they unearthed them this time.
Well, here's the funny part about it. I know who she's fighting, even with a substitute.
Right.
I don't know who Big Nog's fighting or Little Nog's fighting.
Right.
But Kayla Harrison, she's fighting Larissa Pacheco.
Right.
Like, I know that. I paid attention to that. To me, it's like they got to find names. The tournament makes them, to your point, but it's about getting that.
You're
going
to have to brush off some people like the Sarah Kaufmans, who like are champions in other leagues. And even though
fighting two weight classes.
Exactly. Even though it's that, at least she's a name you're throwing into this mix. I feel like that they've got it right because who's Sarah Kaufman fighting? Somebody named Morgan Freier, I think, or Freer. I'm not even sure how she pronounces her name, but nobody's ever heard of this person. I feel like most of them are woodwork figures, but I think that's where you got to start.
Yeah.
You got to make them come, you know, if you're creating the division for Kayla Harrison, you have to create all the contenders and everybody who's going to come towards
Here's the one thing I'll say. I never thought NBC Sports cared about World Series of Fighting. I never thought they cared about the PFL. I do think that ESPN cares about
MMA. I think so too, yeah.
And so that to me is a bit of a difference there.
Yeah.
All right, time now for our last segment before we do After the Beat. Time now for Under the Radar. And there have been a bunch of stories. What's one story kind of floating around there in the ether we didn't talk about today? Kind of interesting, worth at least a mention. Start there, work our way forward. What do you got?
All right, so two guys who we haven't heard from in a long time both signed fight contracts.
I knew you
were going
to do this one.
Matt Wyman, my boy, who's been gone for
handsome.
A long time. Yeah, handsome Wyman for what, 5 years or something. The guy's basically a recluse who, you know, we found out about through the Tough series and had some fights. But he's kind of a recluse, a very eccentric guy. He's returning to fight Luis Pena, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Maybe in South Carolina, I can't remember.
That's
which
right,
part.
Greenville.
And then, and also Gilbert Melendez, who's like,
it's
been since 2017.
Yeah.
I kind of you forget him. He's hiding in plain sight a lot of times with all his analytical work, but he's signed on for a fight. And he's the guy he's fighting, Arnold Allen, is. I've had my eye on him because
he's good.
He's very quiet, 5-0 in the UFC. Yep. The only reason we're not talking about him is because he fought all of his fights in Europe.
Europe, right.
So it's one of those weird do-or-die situations against a really tough dude. So those two guys, it's good to see them, like, the old names cropping back up.
What do you got, Danny?
Sure.
What's under the radar?
Mark Raimondi, our former colleague reporter at ESPN, that Aaron Pico switched training camps.
Yeah,
and he's now training in Albuquerque under Greg Jackson. That's pretty exciting news because, like, you see a guy like Pico, you know, 4-2, so promising, but he's had already, you know, two major setbacks. You want to see him kind of switch camps and get different looks and see, you know, how we can get the best out of him. And I feel like this is one of them. And I feel like over at, in Albuquerque, over at Jackson Wings, they can do that. They can, there's so many experienced guys because that's what he needs. We know he's skilled. He just needs that experience. And hopefully
cats have to be excited to be taking a guy like that in. You know, they love those types of projects. You know?
And Aaron Pico just seems, you know, he's got that wrestling mentality where I'm just going to show up and, you know, work and yes, coach, I'm going to put in the work and knowing how skilled those guys are, like, it's pretty exciting.
I was going to do that one. I think the second one I would bring up is it was a boxing fight. Did you guys watch the Canelo fight on DAZN?
Mm. Oh, I didn't get a chance to see it.
But I heard DAZN was quite a platform.
Dude, they royally effed that up.
Did they?
Yeah, here's the thing about it. If you watch Bellator on DAZN, you would be like, oh, that's more or less the Bellator experience to which I'm accustomed. Dude, they did a really bad job. Like, the shooting of the fight from a camera position was fine, but not good. They messed up Daniel Jacobs' intro.
Yep.
They ran the house music.
And he had to go back?
He had to go back. They had to stop it and restart it.
Now I'm going to have to
do a fight. And then when you watch the fight, you can't hear, there's no miking of the ring, so you can't really hear the punches land.
Oh, man. That's the best part.
And to make matters worse, I do like Brian Kenny and Sergio Mora. I've had Sergio Mora. I've actually had both in studio. They're great, but they were kind of, I think people are exaggerating how much they were advocating on behalf of Canelo, but they did a little bit. And so here's the funny part about it. Sergio Mora got criticized by Daniel Cormier on Twitter. And then Sergio Mora lashed out at him, which I thought was kind of interesting. Here's the only thing I wanted to bring up. It did 600,000 viewers domestically and 1.2 worldwide, which they consider to be a success. I only bring that up because it doesn't sound like TV numbers, but they're giving us benchmarks for what they're looking for. Keep that in mind. 600,000 domestic, 1.2 mil worldwide is what they got. They said they were very happy with that. So,
wasn't Todd Grisham out there on the call? Was he doing prelims or something?
I don't know. Yeah. But the main event was definitely Brian Kenny and Sergio Mora. Yeah. And then Chris Mannix.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. And then they had the fight analysis. And it was, who was the dude who got fired from ESPN for leaking info? Adnan Verk or what? Something like that, right?
Yes.
So DAZN hired him. And he was interviewing Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard had on like bright white pants that was like blinding me to watch. All right. And then in the back, the DJ was playing like terrible like Black Hole Sun remixes. So goddamn loud, you could not hear what they were saying.
You've convinced me to look this thing up. I'm going to have to go watch the whole thing now.
DAZN has a lot of work to do for their boxing production. Again, Bellator
Bellator
seems to be ready to rock, but that was rough. All right, we appreciate you guys tuning in. I believe we're back next week, but I got to see what everything is happening. Hopefully by then I don't look like a mangled idiot who's been in a car wreck and I look like I'm ambulance chasing.
Hey, that speaks to your fortitude to show up here and pull this one out. Sure. Man,
mostly just I want bigger paychecks. but enjoy UFC 237. You've got all the coverage you'll need with Guillermo Cruz, who is down there in Brazil. Yeah. Enjoy Bellator 221.
Jose Youngs is at Bellator 221.
Exactly. We got Chicago. Folks on the ground there as well. So we got you covered right here at MMA Fighting. We appreciate you guys watching. For Chuck, for Danny, I'm Luke. Until next time, hands up, chin down, let them fly. This is the MMA Beat.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.